Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. Those boys.
That's, yeah, they have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. I was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'm going to need it.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
I'm down Swanfield, and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
We bring you Monday's Second Captain's Football Podcast, the day after Manchester United sack Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as manager. This may well be the biggest story of the season so far, which can mean only one thing. Ken Early is on holidays. I'm serious, Bert.
This is unfair. Come on. This is, you know, I think Ken himself rages against this particular cliche that every time a massive football story happens, he happens to be on holiday.
He does,
not strictly true, right?
The last time, this is put to him by World Service members in the past, and he responded rather sniffly, well, other than Christmas, I haven't taken time off since October. Why does everyone apparently believe I am always on holidays? Well, no, Ken, he's not always on holidays. It just happens to be on holidays.
When he's on holidays, yes.
Yeah. Gigantic, I mean, partly it's because we kind of stoke it up, Murph. I mean, we're not blameless here. But it's also because he's been away for O'Neill and Keane being appointed Republic of Ireland managers, Declan Rice declaring for England, Man City getting banned from the Champions League, Solskjaer being removed from the wheel at Man United. It is a not insubstantial body of evidence piling up at this case. So.
It's, you know, like, you kind of need to remind yourself that the stories of this magnitude don't actually happen every week. You know, we're not being unfair on Ken here. It's just very unlucky circumstances. That's all. That's what we're dealing with here.
We drive on, stepping in to fill the Ken-shaped hole will be Jonathan Wilson and Mark Critchley, who covers United for The Independent, and yourself, of course, Murph. Ken being away means you've got to dredge yourself out of an emotional hole after playing and being defeated in a championship final yesterday. So I commend you for this. Have your own endeavours shielded you from much of the pain that you would otherwise be suffering as a Manchester United supporter today?
The most famous club in the world.
You know, I was quite selfish about my pain yesterday, I have to say. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's pain did not come into the equation at around 12:30 or 1:00 yesterday when I heard the news. I rang my dad to give him the lowdown on our county final defeat. And he politely listened to me for a couple of minutes. He was like, "Did you hear Solskjaer's gone?" I was like, "Well, no, I didn't, Dad. I was otherwise engaged." But, I did have an inkling after what happened on Saturday, to be fair.
Unbelievable. I was doing it, Murph. I had the privilege of presenting Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's last game as manager. Mind you, it wouldn't have been his last game if Kenny Cunningham had his way. Kenny was just sticking to the idea that, as he put me on the spot, he's like, "Well, who's going to manage him then? Who are they going to put in there?" And I obviously, that's not an easy, that's always the hardest one to answer when anyone's talking about how a manager should go. And I said, "I don't know, Alex Ferguson couldn't do a worse job between now and the end of the season than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to do." I mean, obviously, I was 75% joking. But by the end of the show, Kenny Cunningham said, "Actually, I think Owen had it right earlier. They should put Alex Ferguson in." Deadly serious to the end of the season. Kevin Doyle was much more along the lines of, "Listen, that like put him out of his misery," and that's what it feels like, I think, today.
And you know, like, you can, this idea that you have to have a ready-made replacement, I mean, like, I don't actually think that's how anything works. You know, if someone is just incapable of doing the job, then you have to, you go out and find someone. You know, it's not like that. You know, I mean, obviously they've made a complete, you know, balls of this, and it was obvious that they had from the moment that Liverpool beat them 5-0, and they still 5-0 at home, and they didn't. They decided not to pull the plug at that stage. I mean, it was like, what are they waiting for at that stage? Like, how could it possibly get any worse than losing 5-0 and then 7-0 on aggregate to your two most hated rivals?
Well, 4-1 against Watford is up there. It's possibly even worse.
It's as bad, but there's nothing worse than losing 5-0 at home to Liverpool. Like, there's literally, like, you can't do any worse than that. And the idea that you hang around and wait for something a little more embarrassing to happen, or, you know, like, it's just like the lack of steel with anyone involved in that club at the moment is just so, it's so bizarre. You know, like the idea that you just couldn't make a decision given all of the evidence that they had.
We're man fucking United!
Up to and including that 5-0 defeat, and still they left him there, blew the chance to get Antonio Conte. But like, but for all that, it's, if the guy's incapable of doing the job, then you find someone that is capable of doing the job. And I don't think you can be like, okay, well, unless there is someone out there right now that we need to swoop and get,
I'll get my Terry Butcher,
we have to leave him in the job. I mean, that's not how it works, you know? Like, if he's not doing the job, you find someone to do the job, and you make a decision then. But just the lack of willingness to make a decision, make an actual act decisively in the club for the last like probably year and a half. I mean, Thomas Tuchel should be the Man United manager, and he should have been put in there 12 months ago. But sure, listen, c'est la vie.
Well, it's also, what have they actually been doing? Okay, it's finally gone now, but the writing's been on the wall for ages, and yet the best they can come up with is Michael Carrick as an interim manager until they then appoint another interim manager until the end of the season, who doesn't seem to be in place either. It's all a little bit of a mess there. The statement was a lot warmer than the one that greeted Jose Mourinho's departure. Back then it was, the club would like to thank Jose for his work during his time at Manchester United and wish him well in the future. A new caretaker manager will be appointed. That was about it.
Yeah.
In this case, it was all, Ole will always be a legend at Man United. It is with regret we have reached this difficult decision. His place in the club's history will always be secure, not just for his story as a player, but as a great man and a manager who gave us many great moments. He will forever be welcome back at Old Trafford as part of the Manchester United family. They also gave him the platform to do a farewell interview, almost 12 minutes, during which he thanked the fans, talked about the absolute ball he had managing the club, before getting a little emotional near the end.
You're going to be watching, clearly, Ollie, so what would you say to the players ahead of, you know, another big game, which is just a couple of days away in Villarreal?
It's, as I've said to them this morning as well, you know, trust yourself. You know, we're better than this. We've not been able to show it, but go out, chest out, enjoy being a Man United player. Champions League, the biggest stage. If and when you win the game, you're through to the next round. Michael's going to be in charge. Michael's, I've got the utmost respect. I love Michael to bits. Becoming emotional now because he's top, and they'll be fine. I'll watch them and support them.
There was a bit of blowback to the interview. It's like, what the hell is this? More Manchester United and social media content. But I kind of liked it. And he decided he wanted to do it.
Mm.
And while it's also been said, really, would any other top manager feel the need to do something like that? Maybe this is further proof that he wasn't cut out for the job. Could all be true, but also he is now finished.
Well, I mean, we've closed the book on whether he's up to the job or not.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I'll give him 12 minutes there. I didn't mind that at all. He did make a bit of a faux pas at one point, though, when he was trying to praise himself for leaving strong foundations.
Don't want to preempt anything, but the two times I've left Molde, they won the league the year after. So all the best whoever takes over. That's the expectations.
I'm not sure the manager is coming after you winning the league is a great sign. And certainly that second time at Molde, he hadn't won the league in that spell. And the first time he had won it a couple of times, in fairness, but not the season before, not in his final season in charge. So I don't know if that one quite worked out as planned when it came out of Ollie's mouth. But there it is. We know no more homespun analogies like this one anyway.
You don't just take the roof off when you're going to rebuild or knock a house. You need to knock a house down and put the foundation in. You just don't start with a roof. And for us, we've had a couple of rainy days, and we wish that roof was on, but you can't hide.
Yes, the roof has closed on Ole's tenure. It's all a far cry from the heady days of March 2019.
Man United might not thank me, but get the contract out, put it on the table, Yeah. Let him sign it. Let him write whatever numbers he wants to put on there, given what he's done now since he's come in, and let him sign the contract and go. Ollie's lit the wheel, man. He's doing it. He's doing his thing. Man United are back.
But even Rio had run out of patience at the end.
On your YouTube channel, your Vibe with Five channel, you said, time for the baton to be handed over. Mm. How hard was it for you to effectively call for the changing of the Man United manager with you as a former United player?
It wasn't, if I'm honest.
Okay, in fairness, he goes on to say that it's his job to analyse the game and give his honest opinion and so on. But you get the point.
Yeah.
When Rio is saying it wasn't hard to call out Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. You know, the Solskjaer. That is exactly the point, actually, when Rio said it, is the point that the hierarchy should have said, okay, we have all the excuse we need now to pull the trigger. Let's do this.
Our new sporting director has come out and said, we must sack this man.
Rio's not the only United legend to have his say.
Guys, we have a problem.
The best way to solve the problem, Murph, the players should drink their way out of it, according to one former captain. Daily Telegraph, exclusive Brian Robson interview. What United need is a boozy bonding session.
It's the best thing in the world for you because it's full of protein.
Oh, well, you've obviously just had one of those, so you can probably attest to the power of this kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus, there's a lot to be said for it, Owen. I have to say, you know, if you want to just like stand around and have lads moaning at each other and talking bullshit for 6 hours, I really feel that's absolutely the way forward now.
Great for the non-drinkers as well in the Manchester United team.
Exactly,
I'm sure they'd really enjoy just sitting there in some, you know,
drink it,
Paddy
drink
Crayon's
it,
pub or whatever.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk more with Mark Ritchie and Jonathan Wilson.
First of all, I'd like to welcome John Delaney here today.
Trying to be critical is well being possible.
Building a house, you build the foundations first. The chimney is the top. The chimney for us is international football.
As well as to John Delaney, you know,
The pleasure, the entertainment, the organisation, the skills that you take to everybody is fantastic.
But you don't have a chimney unless you've got a very strong foundation.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is gone, bringing an end to what Mark Critchley in the Independent describes as the most improbable, the most intoxicating, but mainly the most bewildering episode of United's post-Sir Alex Ferguson era. Mark, thanks for chatting today.
Hey, how's it going?
It's just fine, yeah.
Bewildering stuff. We're
finally here. Jonathan, you finally have a new article to write. How are you?
It's just changing the tenses at the minute. I'm very well, thank you. But I don't like to say I told you so, but I did tell you so. I mean, admittedly, I got the time wrong by about 2 years. But when he got the job permanently, I did say it'll be done by Christmas. I just didn't say which Christmas.
True. Yeah, we got there in the end. So let's start at the end then, guys. What do we make of... Mark, what do you make of the handling of his departure, both by the club and Solskjaer himself?
Well, I think that the way that it's been handled kind of reveals just how they didn't even see this coming. I mean, we were joking about it there, that we're changing the tenses of articles and, you know, he would have been gone 2 Christmases ago, but this really, you only have to look at certain aspects, like the fact that Mike Phelan signed a contract a month and a half ago and that Kieran McKenna and Michael Carrick, all of them are still at the club obviously now, but that was the clearest, I think, public indication that even up until the October international break and before that Leicester game, really, United were not considering any kind of change of management, and things have just kind of snowballed over the last month and a half. It was only really after that Leicester game that Solskjaer himself started to feel that he might be in trouble. It was only really after the Liverpool game that the board started to believe that a decision may have to be made. And the results since then, I mean, you know, there's always been this kind of life support machine of Ronaldo, last minute winners in the Champions League or, you know, equalisers, whatever, that have managed to keep it going. But I remember looking at this run that they were on just at the start of it, and everybody was saying how crucial it was. And you looked at that Watford game and you thought, you know, that's the one bit of respite that they could have in it. But because of the results around it, it kind of became the most dangerous fixture of all, because just the expectation, if you don't win that game and win it comfortably and show that there's at least a platform for improvement, then where do you go from there? And, you know, that was very much the case. Just after, I mean, after the final whistle, it was like less than an hour after the final whistle, they were having discussions about compensation. The writing was on the wall then. He was saying goodbye to some of the staff who were there at Vicarage Road. He was intimating to the players that it was probably going to be his last game in charge. And And it's kind of left United in a situation now where, as I say, you get these indications that they weren't really expecting this. They're now searching for a caretaker to the interim, to the eventual permanent successor. So, yeah, this is a club. This is a club that, you know, has sacked four managers in 7 years now, but it's also sacked, what, five in 35. So there's a fundamental tension there that they always never really, and Woodward, Arnold and the Glazers, they're responsible for those four sackings now. They never really wanted to make another one. But and that's probably what got us into this situation where it just kept persisting and persisting. But like I say, we finally reached the point where we're here and it's over.
Jonathan, the statement obviously is very warm from Manchester United towards Solskjaer. He gets to put out his own interview on the TV station, which was his idea by all accounts. And the players get to line up on social media to thank him for everything he's done. It certainly feels very different from the Mourinho departure.
Yeah, it does. And I'm glad about that because, you know, he is a club legend and he should remain so. He just should never have been given the job permanently. Even as a caretaker, you know, he did the job really well. Yeah, his job was to sort of detoxify the situation after Mourinho. And he did that incredibly quickly. And we've seen other clubs have struggled with that process. But yeah, I just come back to over and over again is why did they make that decision when they made it? If they'd waited till the end of the season and they'd had a full, what, 5-6 months of evidence to base a decision on, then, okay, fine. That's a reasonable body. You can make a decision on whether he is going to be the man going forward. But they give him that job
I remember it myself. I originally I thought, why would you give, you know, okay, he's had a couple of wins, but the more wins he kept having, the Paris night, so it was so, you know, Rio's,
but there was that momentum, but, and yeah, Rio, yeah, saying, oh, give him a job now, and Gary Neville saying, where are you going to put the statue?
What did they gain
by doing it then? What they could have said to everybody was, look, he's got the contract at the end of the season. That's fine. Like, he's not going anywhere. It's not he's going to get poached by Everton or something. Yeah, he was going to sit there and wait till they decide whether he's going to be allowed to stay on. And yeah, they won two of the last 12 games that season. And so by the time, you know, that summer happens, he's already looking finished. And it's sort of dragged out because, yeah, you know, partly because it turned out he could organise a defence in the context of sitting deep and hitting on the break against big teams. And, you know, last season, the six Premier League games against Liverpool, Manchester City and Chelsea, they kept five clean sheets, and he deserves credit for that. But you saw again and again he couldn't organise a midfield in a creative sense. So when they came up against really stubborn, well-organised opposition, occasionally one of the good players would do something brilliant and they'd win. But quite often they didn't. So the West Brom game, the Sheffield United game, the Villarreal game and the Europa League final, probably most importantly. And that happened again and again and again and again. And then this season, Ronaldo's arrived and suddenly he can't organise that midfield defensively either because Ronaldo puts too much pressure on the other end of the pitch. And that's why it's all fallen apart. That's why the spiral has happened in the last seven games.
What about that legacy, Mark? The whole idea of putting the smile back. Like, he was, you know, if he had just been the caretaker and had finished at that point, my word, he would have been the greatest caretaker manager in English football history, maybe. But the idea that he put the smile back on the face, he leaves the club in a much better state, I guess it's true, but only to an extent. I mean, that smile has been wiped off its face in recent times, and his last act is to abase himself in front of the away supporters with Bruno Fernandes standing beside him saying, no, blame us, don't blame him.
Yeah, no, I agree with that entirely there. I think it was almost taken as kind of an article of faith, even when you were, you know, critiquing Solskjaer and saying that this wasn't particularly going to go, he wasn't going to be able to take them to the next level last season or before that. It was always kind of, like I say, taken as an article of faith that he would leave them in a better place than in which he found them, which you could say is as much about the state that Mourinho left them in as much as it does what he's done. But I did always believe that, but I think it would have been easier to argue that if they perhaps take a braver decision and call it quits at the end of last season after the Europa League final with a year left on his contract and say thanks, but, you know, it's time to go for something else, rather than giving him a new 3-year deal and carrying on to the season. I'm not saying that was the obvious choice at the time, and that but that would have felt like a bit of a braver decision, and And you would have to just say he stabilised the club, and he's been, you know, despite his faults, a good manager and probably the best of, or certainly leaving the club in a better place than the three predecessors after Ferguson. Now, I think that's a much harder argument to make. If I'm totally honest, I think that things have particularly soured over the last month and a half, when he kind of had the stay of execution, but also just became a dead man walking, really. You've seen the many complaints about players being unhappy with his kind of loyalty shown to certain players that has maybe tipped over into a kind of unhealthy favouritism. When you have Old Trafford singing Donny van der Beek's name, I think that is, as you had against in the derby, I think that is the clearest sign of kind of just the crowd ever, the most they were ever going to turn against him vocally.
It probably didn't help that van der Beek came on in the second half and was absolutely brilliant.
Well, he scored the final goal of the Solskjaer reign as well. Yeah, I mean, really caps it off, doesn't it?
We've mentioned Ferguson a couple of times. I mean, it's recent. What happened there? Because as recently as after the Liverpool game, there was all the story that Alex Ferguson was still backing Solskjaer, and that was a huge part of what was going on behind the scenes. Do we know? Did he must have lost the Ferguson backing? The club wouldn't have gone against Sir Alex Ferguson's wishes here, surely, Mark?
I don't. But I think the Ferguson element gets overplayed a bit. Like he would definitely he had his backing after the Liverpool game. I'm sure that. I think he would have ultimately, like they all wanted to see Ollie succeed. But you look at that result the other day and the way it's kind of shook the dressing room and like I said, you know, that was the platform, that was the game in which to try and show something and that there could be an improvement. And it's just got to a point where there's just no way out. And like I said, I think the Ferguson element gets overplayed a bit. That decision will have been made by, well, with Woodward and Arnold and ultimately Joe Glazer. And I think it ultimately was the only decision that they could make because it got to that point where even if you've got, you know, the hand of Alex Ferguson on your shoulder, I don't think that it could really last much longer than it did.
Jonathan, do you think Solskjaer might be actually quite relieved at this stage? I mean, his body language after the match the other day just was up. You know, he's doing his interview and he's sort of scrunched up looking and just weight of the world on his shoulders. Is there an element that he's been put out of his misery here?
I mean, certainly that's how it looks from the outside, yeah. I mean, even the interview he did on MUTV yesterday, he was colour back in his cheeks. He suddenly looked a bit more a bit more human. You know, I was thinking about this. I was at the Leicester game and I think Mark's right to identify that as a moment when it really... Yeah, the decline became terminal when it became apparent it wasn't going to get turned around and that there wasn't going to be another little uptick. But I do wonder if there's something about the King Power and just the way it's set up that it leaves managers looking very isolated, because Mourinho's last game in charge of Chelsea was at the King Power. Frank Lampard's last game in charge of Chelsea, or last league game, was at the King Power. I wonder if there's something about those dugouts to just make beleaguered managers look particularly beleaguered. Because I remember sitting in the press box during the second half as United were... I mean, yeah, he got back into that. Did they get back into that 2-2 or did they get back to 3-2? They got back to 2-2 and there was a goal almost immediately, wasn't there?
Yes, that's it. Straight from the...
But it was a slightly strange dynamic in that equaliser came from nowhere and Leicester had been playing him off the park for sort of 10, 15 minutes before that. And then, yeah, there was a long ball to Rashford, wasn't it? And I remember sort of looking down at him, standing seemingly alone, even though, you know, there's 40,000 people around him, staring out sort of, you know, like some sort of Viking elder standing on the clifftops, wondering if the fleet's ever going to return. And sort of, you know, completely unable to arrest, you know, what was going wrong on the pitch. And so I wonder if there's something just about that stadium that makes you really realise how isolated... failing managers are. Sorry, what was the question? I drifted off there.
I'll go with that as an answer, Jonathan. That's I can't even remember the question myself, so I'm happy enough with that. I do want to talk about who's actually in charge of this now. I mean, who takes control of this process, Mark, as you said, too? I mean, they've got their interim before the interim, who's going to be before the permanent manager. It all sounds extremely convoluted and it feels like there's got to be somebody extremely on the ball in charge of this. So who is it, a one-person operation?
Well, I mean, it's going to be headed up by Michael Carrick, as everyone knows, I think. And then Phelan and McKenna.
But I mean, even behind the scenes, you know, like who's the...
Oh, behind the scenes,
yeah,
right.
John Murta is the football director. Nobody knows much about him. He popped up a few weeks ago, you know, pops up now and again, but nobody knows too much about him. You mentioned, obviously, the people in charge of the club, not much football expertise there. You don't think Alex Ferguson necessarily has quite as much power as I'm making out. So who's going to sort through this mess of a process?
I think that the decisions over like the interim and the eventual successor are going to be taken by the same people who ultimately decided that Ollie was going to go. So you're looking at Woodward, although you know he's supposed to be leaving his position at some point, although we're still not quite sure when. Arnold and Joe Glazer and Avram Glazer, they'll be the ones that take the decision on that front. The decision that they have to make at the minute is... It's a very, as you say, a convoluted situation. I mean, Carrick will be heading up the team with Phelan and McKenna. But these are the coaches that you've heard over the last few weeks. A significant proportion of the playing squad aren't totally enamoured with. They aren't, don't feel that their training methods are completely up to scratch. And yet they're the only ones that are in position to be able to take the team forward at this short notice because... Like I say, as we said at the top of the program, that Phelan and these coaches were being given new contracts a month and a half ago. So you're right. I mean, who exactly takes control of this situation now, both on the training ground and in the boardroom? I mean, we'll see. I think in terms of interims, the names that you're hearing, Laurent Blanc, it's another former player. He's got a relationship with Ferguson. He's got a relationship with people at the club. So that might stand in his, you know, that might help him out if he's interested in it. There'll be talks over him and other candidates this week, I imagine. Ralph Rangnick's somebody that's been mentioned a lot. He only joined Lokomotiv Moscow in the summer. And I think Miguel's been reporting that he'd be interested in a role behind the club, you know, in the structure of the club afterwards. Now they've only just restructured the club with Murto and Fletcher and people like that. And Darren Fletcher, like mentioning him, he's the technical director. Well, he's been out in the dugout and taking the pre-match warm-up the last few weeks as well. So quite what his role isn't totally clear. It's been this case for a long time where you're never totally sure who's making the decision at United. But I think ultimately, like I say, it'll come down to the same people that ultimately dispensed with Ollie and made the call. And that'll be on Ed Woodward and Arnold and the Glazers.
Jonathan, I'm going to throw some names at you for permanent managers. Zidane, Pochettino, Ten Hag, Luis Enrique, Brendan Rodgers. Those are the names that the Guardian are reporting this morning as potential candidates. Which one of those do you think is most likely to be the next permanent Man United manager, if any of them?
Okay, hang on. So which is most likely to get the job? Well, I can see that Ronaldo, who clearly has some power, would like Zidane. I can't really understand why Zidane would want the job. Ten Hag, I think, would be a very good appointment, but it would obviously require massive restructuring. There's no point getting Ten Hag in to do an Ajax job unless you turn the club into a sort of an Ajax style. Which is why I think Rangnick's a really interesting proposition. I think... Yeah, when he was at Schalke as head coach, he found it very difficult to deal with the pressure there. So I can't see him wanting to do the job of manager full time. But at Leipzig, I think he did the job for a season, keeping it warm for somebody. Then he stepped into the background, and I think he much prefers that running things behind the scenes. But again, it is a massive restructuring. Rodgers. I don't know if a Liverpool thing would be problematic, but he obviously is a very good coach and he knows the Premier League. Pochettino, for me, would be the best option, assuming he becomes available at the end of the season. But again, I think there'd need to be restructuring because I think he was burned at Tottenham and is in the process of being burned at PSG. I think he'd want a structure in which he had a lot of say. So I almost think the coaches... And I guess we've been saying this for sort of three... Well, since Ferguson left, that the coach is a part of the issue, but there are much bigger issues in the background. Having said that, and I guess this goes back to what we were saying about does Solskjaer leave a club in a better position to that in which he found it? I was reading back to an old interview I did with Louis van Gaal, and van Gaal made the point that when he was at United, he had seven players aged 33 or over, and the promising young kids he'd been promised were Tyler Blackett and Cameron Borthwick-Jackson. Now, if either of you know where either of those is playing now, well, you're a better man than me. And yeah, he was saying they wouldn't spend money for him, but they then spent it for Mourinho. And so he was making a big thing of, I think he'd finished fifth in Mourinho in his last season. Mourinho finished sixth in his first season. And you say, well, Mourinho had all this money spent, so yeah, actually I did a better job. And I'm broadly, I'm broadly pro Van Gaal, but I accept that the football towards the end of that season got pretty miserable. But I think he was playing with a much weaker hand than the new manager who comes in will have, with the obvious caveat that the new manager will have to deal with Ronaldo.
Yeah, well, I mean, that is the big issue, Jonathan, really, isn't it, for whoever comes in? You said that Ronaldo, and I've read this reported that United are in for Zidane in part to appease Cristiano Ronaldo, who had success under him, but I mean, might Ronaldo's presence there not be quite so... maybe Zidane, that might be part of the problem if Zidane is weighing up whether or not to go and take this job.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, I'm not sure how close their relationship was at the end at Real Madrid. I mean, they both left the club at the same time. So, I mean, Ronaldo's seen off five managers in 3.5 years now. If you count Zidane as part of that, then Allegri, Sarri, Pirlo and Solskjaer. So, and it's a problem. He's such a big entity that wherever he is, even a club as big as Juventus or Manchester United becomes FC Ronaldo and everything revolves around him. And, we saw at Juventus that their total domination of the league was eroded by that. And they got worse in the Champions League. They go out in the quarterfinal in the last 16 to Ajax and Porto. So it's not even that they've been drawn against... I mean, okay, that Ajax side was a really, really good side, but it's not they're being drawn against Manchester City's or Chelsea's or Bayern Munich's. So I think he has become problematic for the elite of the elite.
The Rodgers one is interesting, Mark. I don't know what you feel. I would have thought United fans might be able to swallow the ex-Liverpool thing if Rodgers was flying it again this season and had them in a Champions League race. But we've already been talking about managers looking beleaguered at Leicester, at the King Power Stadium. The current Leicester manager is looking a bit beleaguered there now. I mean, they can't go for the manager of the 12th place team in the Premier League, surely.
I think he's appreciated and admired, but I'd agree. I don't think that his stock is particularly high at the minute, and it's been kind of going a little bit under the radar. But even when the noises around him were a little bit louder over the last few weeks, it didn't really feel like, you could really sell that, particularly because of the Liverpool angle, which I don't know. Maybe some supporters will be able to come around to. I think there's maybe enough distance there. But and United, the last few years, this whole cultural reset, it has had quite a British focus, if you like, and that may play a part in the decision. But I don't particularly see it. I still think that if everything was equal, and then they'd be quite happy and quite interested in going back to Pochettino if they were able to do that. I think that's still an open question. Signed a new contract to PSG until the end of next season, I believe. So whether they'd be able to extricate him from there, I don't know. But I think that would maybe be their preference, is the sense that I get at the minute. Ten Hag is another really interesting one. But again, is somebody who would only really be able to, you'd only be able to get out at the end of the season. And that was really the telling thing about the statement yesterday. You know, this weird situation they've got them in, the interim to the caretaker to the permanent successor, whatever, that speaks to them only really being able to get a preferred and desired candidate in the summer. So, you know, Rodgers may be available sooner than that. Who knows if things keep going the way they are. So I'd feel like, you know, while he is admired, and like I say, that British element has been part of the thinking over the last few years, that I think there's others that are more preferential to the people currently making the decisions.
Well, in fair, so who do you think? Who do you think they'd be going for?
I think it's Pochettino. I think Pochettino would be the preferred one, and then maybe Ten Hag. But like the odd thing about the situation is that we're so far out, aren't we? If the plan is to go at the end of the season, plenty can change between now and then, and succession planning for managers now. is an incredibly difficult thing for top clubs to do. You know, we're going to see in a couple of years that Liverpool and probably City have to do that as well. And they're extremely well-run clubs, but we're going to see how well-run they are when they run into needing to find a top or an up-and-coming manager who's available and they can get, because very few managers switch top clubs. It just really doesn't happen anymore, which was the whole thing with Conte the other week. So, you know, this kind of fudge that they've got at the minute might actually allow them to reassess it at the end of the season and get their most desired and preferred candidate in. And while it does look like a mess and we're taking the piss out of it a little bit, you know, I do think that it's probably the wisest thing to do just to wait until then and try and see the rest of the season out, because Solskjaer was never going to win. He wasn't going to win the Premier League title, so that had gone. You know, you've always got a chance in the Champions League because it's a cup competition or whatever. But if you get a solid interim in the meantime, they've got just as much a chance of that. So I don't particularly see it as writing the season off. Some people have criticised them for that. I don't particularly see it as that. I see it as maybe just getting through this season and getting the best out of the season possible, as good as you were going to get anyway by sticking with Solskjaer. And then really optimising and taking forward for the season's future seasons by getting the preferred candidate in the summer.
Well, in fairness, if Michael Carrick gets a few wins early on, Jonathan, without wanting to repeat the mistakes of the recent past, he could at least have the job till the end of the season. Like, I don't see this obsession with having to get an interim manager if you've got these coaches in place. But, you know, just that as has been outlined by Mark there, if the players already have their doubts about the coaches who are now effectively their managers, it's not an ideal situation, really.
No, it's not. I mean, just on this... on how hard it is to get the right manager. Two quiz questions for you. So first of all, how many managers have won the league with Manchester United? And secondly, how many managers have won the league with more than one club?
Well, three managers.
United.
There'd be Busby Ferguson and Ernest Magnell, Jonathan, 1907, 08 and 1910, 11. I did look this up before, just in case it came up. I was quite struck by that. Three managers. What was the second question? Because I won't know the answer to this. I didn't look it up.
How many managers have won the league with more than one club?
Go on, Mark. Premier League.
The League Championship / Premier League.
League Championship, yeah. Okay. Three.
Well, it's not bad. It's four.
Four, okay.
let me make sure I've got them right. Dalglish, Clough, Chapman and Tom Watson, who was the first to do it with Sunderland and Liverpool, of course. The only man to do it twice with different clubs. But anyway, my point is, it's very difficult to get the right manager. You know, even in the modern age where realistically only three or four teams can win the league, I mean, it seems that sort of top managers are on this sort of carousel. They're not really. It's still really hard to go and win the league with another side. That, you know, different circumstances, different players, different slightly different point in your career. So it is hugely difficult. But to go back to your question, yeah, if these players don't have no faith in these coaches, and they're not experienced coaches, none of them. I mean, I know Phelan had his time at Hull. But getting sacked by Hull, I don't think it's going to impress Cristiano Ronaldo. And the others are very recently in the job. So I understand why they may not actually be at the high level. That's not to say they won't ever be at a high level. I understand why players may be sceptical about them. So then you have this problem. And this is one of the issues of succession planning. What if you do bring in an interim and he turns out to be brilliant and wins the... Yeah, does it Di Matteo and wins the Champions League? Do you then feel compelled to give him a job and then sack him next October?
Mark, just to finish up on Solskjaer, the most intoxicating, the most bewildering episode, as you said, of this era, of this post-Ferguson era. When did it move from being intoxicating to bewildering for the supporters, do you think? When did they begin to... Because there was, you know, for a while, everybody else was seeing the writing on the wall and United fans were still defending Solskjaer, but that support seemed to ebb away in recent times. When did he lose the fans, you reckon?
Well, you're always fighting for the middle ground, aren't you, I think, with these things. And I think, like, whereas there was always Ollie out or whatever trending, that you never felt like it was a serious bone of contention for the fans until really, I'd say, the start of the season. But again, around the same time as this Leicester game that we're identifying, I think it really has. That was kind of not fatal because it didn't finish him. But once you have that and once you have the results tumbling over each other, like the Liverpool game and the City game, you know, even match going fans, I have mates who go away with United to European aways. They've been messaging me for weeks, like, tell me he's gone. I mean, it's been, and you just wouldn't have that before. You know, there would be that kind of flip of, yeah, there's a bad result and people feel a bit down about the team, but they get another one and they're singing his name again. And I think in a similar vein as the board and a lot of the decision makers at Old Trafford, everybody wanted him to do well, and wanted him to do well more so than any manager since Ferguson, probably before that as well. Just because of what he means and what he identifies, how he identifies with the club. But you saw that really turn sour. Just, I mean, that I'll always remember that shot of it, like after Pogba got sent off in the Liverpool game. I was obviously at the game, so I didn't see it on telly myself, but just of Old Trafford from an aerial view and people just emptying out. I mean, you wouldn't get that. You didn't have that during the worst times under Van Gaal and Mourinho, when there was a lot more kind of opposition towards the manager. And at that point, you just felt like, well, if he's lost some of the match-going supporters here, then there really is no way back for him. And that's how it turned out.
Yeah. When Kenny Dalglish is sitting in the stands at Old Trafford laughing his head off, you know the writing is probably on the wall for the Manchester United manager. Okay, great stuff, Mark. Jonathan, brilliant. Thanks a million.
Cheers.
Cheers, thank you.
We don't have too long to wait to see how the Michael Carrick era is going to look. Manchester United are away to Villarreal in the Champions League tomorrow night. You're going to have to be a World Service member to follow our coverage of that. It's also Chelsea Juve tomorrow evening, then Liverpool Porto, and Man City PSG on Wednesday. Oof. This is a pretty good week of Champions League. Also, maybe a win for Pochettino there against City mightn't do any harm if he actually wants to manage Manchester United. Mm. Rather than
or a loss against City. I mean, I don't know how this plays out, to be honest, John. If yeah. he loses, maybe he loses his job and then gets another job. I mean, listen.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We're playing checkers, he's playing chess, Owen.
I'm sure whatever happens from here on in, the United fans will keep their heads anyway. They're always a level-headed bunch.
What type of midfielder is Herrera? He's not a box-to-box. Yeah. He's not defensive. Well, he can't do a fucking killer pass. Why is he on the fucking pitch for what?
Is he part of a lot of deadwood that we need to get rid of?
Yeah. But of course he fucking is. There's a lot of fucking dead without getting fucking gone. See him come here and fucking boss us at Old Trafford. This is Man United talking. See him come here and fucking boss us. We're not fucking Stoke. We're Man fucking United here. We should be battling fucking them. That was diabolical out there.
Ah, yes, an oldie there.
But a goodie,
the
nevertheless.
Passion in the stands there at Old Trafford. Thanks, Murph. Well done on getting through this in your post-championship final.
Thanks, Owen. I appreciate
done a
that.
Really good job. And thank you for listening. Most importantly, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, thanks for the memories.
Thank you very much. See you soon.
What phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
World Service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.